pumping up, pumping iron.
Gold's Gym, Venice, California, where many of the best bodybuilders in the world come to train. Arnold Schwarzenegger, 28 years old, 6'2", 240 pounds. Mr. Olympia for the past 5 years. He is preparing to defend his title this year for the last time.
Welcome to Now Playing's bonus review of Pumping Iron.
Let's say you train your biceps. Blood is rushing into your muscles, and that would be called a pump. Your muscles get a really tight feeling.
A Podbean backer review chosen by Clark Fisher.
Let's give him a big welcome.
Hosted by Arnie.
He's good, but he lacks too many things.
Stuart.
Take a look at this hunk of man.
And Jacob.
They are the three finalists, not necessarily in order.
This podcast will contain detailed plot spoilers and harsh language.
I threw up many times while I was working out, but it doesn't matter.
Listener discretion is advised.
This is for all the marbles, and we're going to go after it, right? Heaven.
Everybody wants eternity. Eternity. Today, we are Pumping Iron with Arnold Schwarzenegger, Lou Ferrigno, Franco Colombo, Mike Katz, Ken Waller, Ed Corney, Serge Nubray, directed by George Butler and Robert Fiore. This is Arnie, and I'm getting the feeling of podcasting at the office. I get the feeling of podcasting when I come home, when I'm backstage. I feel like I'm podcasting day and night. I'm in heaven.
Yeah, you're the luckiest guy. And this is Stuart.
And this is the co-host who is going to pump you up. Jacob.
Ah, Hans and Franz.
Yeah, it's the eternal New Year's resolution, right? I'm going to get in shape this year. I'm really going to hit the weights. I'm the new me. We're going to try for you guys. Believe me, I want to leave 2020 behind.
After 2020, my resolution is just to make it through the year alive anymore.
And with everybody around me alive as well. Yes, I agree. But no, this is the time where all of the sales go on for fitness equipment. You see it all the time. In January, it's discounted Christmas stuff and fitness stuff because everybody is buying it up. So yeah, New Year's Day is a good time to look at people who actually kept the resolutions as compared to the rest of us.
Mm-hmm. And if anyone wants to buy my Solaflex from 1989, it's available on eBay.
I can't count the number of treadmills I've used as clothes racks.
I got a treadmill in the garage if any of you want it. Just come pick it up.
So Pumping Iron makes like a good sense for the first day of the new year, but why are we picking it now?
I don't think we did pick it, did we?
Yes. Like, who picked this choice?
This was picked by Clark Fisher, and he is with us. Clark, why are we pumping iron?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. First, I've always been a huge Arnold fan, and this is kind of getting Arnold in at the beginning. I mean, who would have thought back then this dude's going to be the biggest star ever? And hey, let's run for governor of California while we're at it. And shoot, he might have been president, were it not for the citizenship thing. Secondly, I do this. This is kind of my hobby. I'm a competitive amateur bodybuilder. I go on stage, so I kind of live this lifestyle on an amateur basis to some degree. And third, I wanted to see what you guys did with something really different. I didn't even realize you did documentaries till I came across The King of Kong. And I said, okay, if you can do that about a bunch of scrawny video game people, then why not Arnold?
Yeah, I looked. We've done two actual documentaries before, Plastic Galaxy covering Star Wars toys, King of Kong. I feel like we really discussed Room 217 during The Shining, the worst movie ever made during Troll 2. We kind of touched upon Full Tilt Boogie and Hearts of Darkness with From Dusk Till Dawn and Apocalypse Now. But yeah, this is the third dedicated documentary review. And I have to ask, Clark, if you do this on an amateur level, do you also take the ballet classes?
I haven't done that yet, but she was pretty cute, and it couldn't hurt.
Yeah, so many surprises, so many thwarted expectations. If you don't know much about bodybuilding, I do think this movie opens your eyes. I saw it a long time ago, like in film school, before I turned 30 and before I decided I needed to get into better shape and started lifting weights, and long before I moved to Los Angeles. And yes, I moved to Venice Beach. I spent most of the 10 years in Los Angeles working out at Gold's Gym, the original Mecca. So, like, seeing this movie, coming back to it, I was excited just for nostalgia reasons.
Yeah, I didn't know the Gold's Gym, like there was an indoor Gold's Gym in Venice Beach. There's that iconic one that's outside. I guess that's Muscle Beach or something. I don't know. But I always assumed that was the Gold's Gym.
Yeah, that's a newer thing. That's not really. The one that actually is on the sand was sort of a tourist trap thing. But the real Gold's Gym in this movie is gone. The gym relocated to a much bigger space. I hear Google is trying to buy it.
It looked very small in this.
Yeah, it's very tiny in this movie. It's not the space that I was in. But I did frequently, when I was there, I mean, Lou would come in all the time. Arnold would be there occasionally. He had some fights with the management. Sometimes he was there. Sometimes he was pulling down his photos from the walls and he wouldn't see them. So I don't know what was going on there. But, you know, I'm on record. I'm not a huge Arnold fan as an actor or even as a politician. But I did, you know, how can you not be impressed with him, his physique, his dedication to bodybuilding, and how he turned all of America on to fitness?
Yeah, and I come to this as, at least when I was a kid, I was an Arnold fan. I think it's after he had his political run here in California as a resident of the state. I'm like, nope, I don't like him anymore. He did not do yes. good as governor.
Ask any nurse if they like him or student that had loans. Yeah, nope.
But no, I did enjoy him a lot as a kid, you know, Terminator and Conan and just so many iconic films growing up. But I have never watched this. This is a first time view. I knew it existed. I remember a lot of clips that I had seen from this that came flooding back to me, because when he did run for governor, they dug up clips from this film and, you know, used them for ads and used them to, like, convince you, like, this guy is not good. He's smoking pot in a movie. Don't vote for him. Now, pot's legal here. It's kind of a joke. But no, they used a lot of the stuff from this to kind of, like, try to convince people not to vote for him. So I knew those clips, but I had never seen the film before.
I've never seen this film either. I consider myself a Schwarzenegger fan. I especially was from 87 through like 97, I would say. You know, I think I really started discovering him after the Terminator. I didn't see the Terminator till 87, 88. And then T2, of course, and I saw everything he did through End of Days and a little bit beyond. And then the movies he's done since his governorship, I've seen a couple of them. It's hard to see a couple of them. I don't think they get too many domestic releases, but they're not very good. But I'm still a fan of Arnold. You know, he's making videos online with his dogs and things, and he's just, you know, a regular guy. I kind of like watching his Insta.
Oh, yeah, of course he's an Insta star. Like, that doesn't surprise me. I haven't kept up with him, but yeah, he is obviously an icon and a legend. And I do think that Pumping Iron, if for no other reason, it just rode that wave, right? Where America, like, had been going through a really bad time, counterculture, Vietnam. And then all of a sudden, like a light switch, we all decided we want to feel good. We want to look good. We want to go to the disco. And that means we got to get in shape.
Is that why there's so much disco music in this film?
Oh, yeah, it's totally the era. Jane Fonda and the aerobics. Bruce Jenner's going to be on your cereal box. Maybe you're going to take up jogging or wear a leotard. And weightlifting came into vogue at the same time. Before then, I think if you thought of bodybuilding, you thought of what? Swords and Sandals movies and Charles Atlas ads in the back of comic books?
Yeah, they even show one of those Atlas ads here. And that was my thought, you know, back in the 70s and 80s when I thought of bodybuilders.
Yeah, I never knew a whole lot about bodybuilding. I remember every once in a while, like on a Saturday afternoon, like ESPN 17 would have some bodybuilding competition. And, you know, I thought it was actually kind of gross. Like, I don't know, male or female bodybuilding, like not a turn on for me. It's just, I don't know, all those muscles poking out, it kind of freaks me out. But when I really like got interested, I had a cousin who was a weightlifter. And you'd think bodybuilding, weightlifting, pretty similar. Except when you look at a weightlifter, like in the Olympics, and he almost went to the Olympics. That's why I really like got into talking to him about this stuff, is that with weightlifting, they look obese. Like, he looked obese, but if you punched him in the gut, like, it was solid muscle. They just don't care about shaping it. And that was the first time I came to understand, oh, you have to shape the muscles and target certain muscles for this bodybuilding stuff. Like, it was actually kind of just fascinating. I never wanted to get into it, but I did find that very interesting, that if you wanted to look these guys, you couldn't just lift weights. You actually, like, had to do certain things and target certain areas and all that. And so I had a little bit of knowledge going in, but it was never a major hobby of mine.
Yeah, that's actually my first question, because I do think that when I think of sports, I think of, you know, okay, like powerlifting, that makes sense to me because that's a competition. Who's the strongest? Who can lift this? But do you consider bodybuilding a sport?
Yeah, I always assumed these guys were super strong. And look, they are super strong. But it's different than when you watch, you know, over in England where they're lifting up these boulders and having to put them on pedestals for the World's Strongest Man contest or whatever. Like, it is a different thing.
Yeah, those guys do not look good. They look the opposite of good.
But they are solid muscle. That is the thing. I do want to call that out. They are like not just fat guys lifting rocks. They're just not shaped like these ones. But I guess, I mean, is Miss Universe a sport? I don't know. Like, you got to get tone. You got to be able to talk about world peace and that. Like, I don't know if that makes it a sport, though.
I feel like a beauty contest is different.
Yeah, I mean, if figure skating is a sport and all these other things are sports, bowling, golfing.
No, but those have objectives. I mean, like, you have to get the ball into the hole. You have to hit the triple axel. With bodybuilding, to me, it feels like a beauty contest because it's really, I mean, they'll break it down for us. They'll tell you what they're looking for. But in the end of the day, it's kind of about what you think looks the most aesthetic. It's subjective.
The reason I was comparing it to like ice skating and gymnastics is it's qualitative, not quantitative. If you have a lifting competition, the person who lifts the most wins, quantitative. If you have figure skating, yeah, they do the triple axel and whatnot, but did they stick the landing? That's qualitative, you know? What is their form like? There's clearly bad and clearly good.
Yeah, when you end up face down in the ice, I think we know, but yeah, I get your point.
And if I entered a bodybuilding competition, there's clearly bad and clearly good, right? I mean, just like falling on the ice. But beyond that, then it becomes qualitative. So yeah, I'd consider this a sport. There's certainly enough prep and working out and physicality to it to call it a sport.
Yeah, but it all goes on behind the scenes. All of that work we don't see unless you watch this movie. And I think that's what's interesting is that we only see the end product. This movie's going to show you what it takes to get there. And before it was a movie, it's just worth pointing out, this really started out as a Sports Illustrated article. This guy, Charles Gaines, he was trying to be a novelist. He had published a book called Stay Hungry. More on that in just a little bit. And he was trying to sell the idea that bodybuilding is mainstream. It's not about circus freaks. It's not about guys with inferiority complexes working out in their basement. This can be something for all of America. And because Stay Hungry, the book, which had a bodybuilder character in it, was so critically acclaimed, they said, all right, we'll let you do kind of a coffee table book companion. And this guy actually coined the term pumping iron. Gaines is the one who equates lifting weights with that euphemism. So he gets the credit, and he went to the 1972 Olympia, and with the photographer, the director of this movie, really, they started taking pictures, and lo and behold, guess who they met? Arnold Schwarzenegger. And that really is where it started as a book, became a bestseller, but they knew if they were going to make a movie out of that book, they needed Arnold. Arnold was their star to hang any camera on. And even though he wanted to retire from bodybuilding, he kept up so that he could get his movie career going.
And you say a movie. Okay, movies are based on books. I get that. This is a documentary, though. This is supposed to be like real life as it's happening. Like, how can it be based on a book if it hasn't happened yet? Is it because they just wanted that title, Pumping Iron?
Well, yeah, they wanted to jump on a name that people would have recognized, a bestseller. But they couldn't cover the 1972 Olympia because they weren't there with film cameras. So it couldn't be about the same substance. It's not going to document the same competition. Their original idea is kind of funny. Again, if Arnold was going to retire, we can't go to a show. Why don't we actually have him pump up some little beanpole? We're actually going to hire Bud Cort. Remember him from Harold and Maude? He's the scrawny yes. guy that gets with the old lady. And
vaguely, I remember him.
We did cover him in the Bates Motel movie from the 80s. I don't know if people even remember that show or that TV movie, but he was sort of he became a character actor. It'd be like taking Steve Buscemi or somebody that's just scrawny and nerdy. But he was really a fan of the book and he really did want to pump up. And there is footage on the DVD. I don't know how you guys watched this, but if you watched Raw Iron, which sort of took some of the old footage, you can see them and Arnold and Bud Cort trying to pump him up. And eventually,
did Bud Cort not put on the muscle? Because that's not in here.
He didn't put on the muscle, but more to the point, they realized like that really wasn't going to work. That wasn't a movie that that people really wanted to see. That sounded like a reality show, maybe. Like, it was ahead of its time in that way. But I think they realized at the end of the day, what was really awesome were these guys in the Gold's Gym in Venice Beach. And we got to convince Arnold to go one more time. He had won 5 Olympias. You got to go for your 6th. And we'll see what happens. But these guys, they weren't film people. And I think you can kind of tell watching this movie, the structure of it is a little weird. They weren't journalists, or rather Gaines was, but he wasn't the director. The photographer of the Pumping Iron book is the one that became the director. And he, again, he was just kind of documenting what he saw on the fly, trying things. And again, Bud Cort for half of his footage before they finally landed on the idea that it's all about going to the 75 bodybuilding competition and looking at amateurs. And then eventually they land on this idea that Arnold versus this new guy in town, this even bigger bodybuilder, we can build it up as sort of a Rocky kind of sports movie.
Stuart, you kind of hint at some of the questions I had. And you're the film guy. You went to film school. I don't know how much you know about documentaries, but like, where are we on the evolution of documentaries? Because I watch a lot, and like watching this one, it feels like it's in its primitive form. It does not follow or hit the same beats that I feel like most documentaries nowadays would hit trying to form a narrative. This just feels, yeah, more like here's a bunch of footage and we'll try to cobble it together.
Yeah, exactly. When you say it's based on a book, I'm thinking a book would have a stronger cohesion. And yes, just when talking about King of Kong, I felt like that had an arc that could be in a fictional movie. It was so tight. So yeah, here I was curious how this compared to the book in forms of narrative.
They don't even call it a documentary. They call it a docudrama. And the reason is because a lot of this stuff isn't real. When you actually find out some of it, like after they went to the competition, they were like, oh, we got to go back and film other stuff and set stuff up in this that we didn't have before.
So they didn't know what they were doing.
They didn't know what they were doing. They hadn't ever produced, directed, written. Nobody here. Arnold had done a Hercules movie, but most of them really didn't know what it was to be in front of or behind a movie camera. And so you're watching amateurs really make the pilot episode of Punk'd, maybe? Like, it feels like the birth of reality TV more than a documentary. To answer your question, the documentary is almost as old as movies itself. And so there were a lot of classic films, and there are structured documentaries get written oftentimes. I know people feel like, well, how could they be when you don't know what you're going to get? But good documentarians usually come in with agenda bases, and they kind of know where they're going to go and where it'll go. And then, of course, reality takes them in whatever direction you're going to experience it. But I would say if you feel this movie feels looser than your average documentary, it has a lot more to do with how this movie was made and less to do with the documentary genre itself. Again, I'll point out that Arnold was the key to all of this. If they knew there was one thing that they had to get right, the cover of the book was somebody else. But they knew by this point that Arnold was the star. And I think when you see this movie, it's very clear that he, above all of the other guys here, has like the story and is able to play to the camera in a way. And that was the thing about bodybuilders, right? They're angry. They're stupid. They don't speak. And like, there was all these conceptions that they were mentally off and couldn't articulate. And so here was a guy who was charming and happy to just play to the audience. He wanted to be the next Clint Eastwood. That was, in his words, what he saw this as being. And he actually got Gaines to get him the part in Stay Hungry, the movie. They adapted that movie around the same time they were shooting this film. Have you guys ever seen it?
No.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, it's. I had always heard it was this charming comedy from the director of 5 Easy Pieces, you know, an early Jack Nicholson movie.
Oh, yeah, I love that movie. A charming comedy from that director?
Yeah, it's Jeff Bridges inheriting a property that is a gym that he wants to bulldoze, but the bodybuilders there don't know yet. And Sally Field gets raped. Like, there's nothing funny about like the last 30 minutes of the movie. I was kind of watching it horrified. But some people will tell you it's this great little thing in Arnold's resume. He did get a Golden Globe for participating in that movie as sort of the bodybuilder with a heart, who kind of is the third spoke of that romantic triangle between Sally Field and Jeff Bridges. It's a weird movie.
What a triangle that is.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it a good movie, but it's check it out, because again, what happened was that director said, Arnold, you're too bulky. If we're going to look at you as romantic, you got to slim down. He's normally 250. He got down to 210. And then, okay, we need you to go compete. This movie, what it really is about is him trying to bulk up those 40 pounds, trying to get back into the shape that he was. That's where he's at when he starts this movie. He had just done his first Hollywood comedy, and now he's trying to one more time prove he's a bodybuilder.
Okay, well, I would say his first comedy is Hercules in New York. I watched that as homework for this. Oh, boy.
Oh, I've never seen it.
Lou Ferrigno was in a Hercules film. I got to compare their Hercules films for this review. But that was, you know, 1970. I think that was his very first thing ever. Like, they had to overdub his voice because I'm assuming you couldn't even understand him. So you're saying, what, the Stay Hungry had gotten him some notoriety as a movie star? Like, people went into Pumping Iron knowing who Arnold was at this point?
Kind of. I mean, I think Arnold was, you know, he was making the rounds, and I think he did episodes of TV. He'd popped up in a Robert Altman. He had been in movies. I shouldn't say that he hadn't done a movie yet, but this was a starring role. Hercules, I forgot about that one. Yeah, he did do a Hercules in New York movie. How bad is it, Jacob? I've never seen it.
It's pretty bad. Like, again, I thought it was going to be like a softcore porno because it is so cheaply made. I'm like, oh, so all like the Greek goddesses are going to be topless. No, it's a pretty bad comedy. I found a little charm in Arnold Strand, who is the comedic actor in that film. But oh boy, if you like fish out of water jokes, like that is all that film is. Really bad fish out of water jokes as Hercules, I don't know, like rides a chariot down Times Square and becomes a wrestler. It's kind of incoherent.
No, I boy. Yeah, I'm not surprised that it's incoherent, given that they took this unknown Austrian as the star there. Whose is better, though? I mean, how is Lou's?
That one I've seen.
So Lou, his is more of a straight Hercules via Star Wars, via, you know, Clash of the Titans. Like, they have some stop motion. They have some, not animated like a cartoon, but, you know, where they, you know, like energy monsters that are just have that charming, like old school Hollywood special effects style, like animation. Like, look, if you got some acid, I wish I had some acid. Like, no one told me like that was going to be a good drug trip. Like, I think that is the only way to enjoy that film. Lou, also overdubbed in that film, but better. His ADR is much better.
I'm hearing that he's the winner, and I think I agree with you because...
Barely the winner. Here's the thing. It's not because of Lou in that film, and I'm sure we'll talk about Lou versus Arnold and their charisma and all that. Arnold's way more charismatic, even though it's not his voice. Like, I was paying attention to his body language. Like, I was much more taken by Arnold in that awful film. Hercules, the Lou Ferrigno one, it's just a better constructed film, but it's not because of him. Whatever charms I found in it was not because of Lou.
Yeah, well, I don't want to go and compare them. Thankfully, we're not doing the retrospective. But why don't we just find out what they do in this film? Arnie, why don't you give them a plot, if there is one to give, and we can get into Pumping Iron.
Well, not really a plot, but the premise of Pumping Iron is following a number of bodybuilders, Arnold Schwarzenegger and Lou Ferrigno being the two most well-known of the set. We see them train and compete as they prepare for the Mr. Olympia 1975 Bodybuilding Championship. Schwarzenegger has won the previous five, and this is Lou Ferrigno's second time in the competition. At the end, Schwarzenegger wins for the sixth time, while Ferrigno comes in last in third place. Schwarzenegger announces he's retiring from competitive bodybuilding, but will still lift as credits roll.
And we begin in irony, I believe. They wanted, again, if you're going to see a movie about big guys and their veins bulging and so macho, what a surprise it must be, right? When we open in a New York ballet studio.
Yeah, I literally, I'm like, oh, did Christopher Guest direct this? Is this another one of his mockumentaries? Because it feels like such, you know, Spinal Tap or Waiting for Guffman. It's totally one of those openings.
It's a grabber, though. You know, it's already telling you you're going to get something other than you expect. And when you think of bodybuilding, I think of lifting weights, specifically lifting weights. Secondly, I think of juicing, but first I think of lifting weights.
They don't juice. There is no juicing in this film.
I know, but yet Arnold admitted that he did. So that's much after the fact, but he's admitted to it. So
they were all juicing. Come on.
And to be clear, Arnold in the bonus features says at this time it was legal. So they didn't feel like it was like getting the edge over anybody because these were not controlled substances. You could get anabolic steroids and go out on stage and nobody was having you pee in a cup.
So to see how the posing needs to have gracefulness to it, and when the ballet instructor says, you're not just being seen at the start and the end of the pose, you're being seen throughout the whole movement, it's honestly the only time in this movie that it exposes me to a side of the bodybuilding competitiveness that I wouldn't have thought of.
Yeah, no, I bought right into this. I'm like, oh, it makes sense. They have to do these poses and actually look very graceful. So do they not really take ballet lessons? I mean, like, I'm sure now they don't do this, but at some point did they do this to try to learn, like, how to, because that's all about muscle control, being a ballet dancer, getting on your toes and doing all these perfect, you know, jumps and everything. It's all muscle control. So it makes sense to me, but is this 100% made up?
No, I think they were actually doing this to learn something. But, you know, they are trying to make a comparative here. Like, later Arnold will compare bodybuilding to sculpting, and to promote this movie, they actually, like, rented out the Whitney Art Gallery and had all these guys, like, stand up in pedestals amid fine art and have art critics come in and talk about their bodies as sculpture. It's kind of a joke just to start, but I also think it's a theme of this movie that we want you to think of this, if not as a sport, then at the very least as an art form, and that these people put a lot of work into sculpting and crafting their bodies in the way that Michelangelo would have created David.
And I do kind of get that. I mean, Arnold's going to give a little monologue later about how he's like a sculptor, but instead of putting clay on, you know, if he needs to build those deltoids, he's got to do certain kind of workouts and lift certain kind of weights to build that part of the sculpture. Like, I totally get that as a theme throughout this film. Like, that's one of the things that does totally work for me. Like, A+ for hitting that one on the head.
Yeah, I guess that is something else that I never really thought of, is when Arnold's talking about you can't just work one muscle group. If you're going to enlarge one muscle, you have to enlarge all of them, because there's more to bodybuilding than just lifting the most. It's that you have to be proportional to a degree.
Yeah, and that's where I start having problems with this documentary, because they say that, but I still don't know what being proportional means, like, as far as bodybuilding goes. I do wish they would have got into more of those technical aspects, because when you get to the final scene, I don't know, I just got to go by what the judges say. I don't know if they made the right choice or not, because I haven't learned anything about, you know, or whatever little you could teach me in an under 90 minute documentary about bodybuilding. I wish I knew a little bit more about proportions and all that at the end.
Well, some of this is Gaines. And again, Gaines is not the director of this. He is the author of the Pumping Iron book, the man that coined the phrase, the guy that wrote the Sports Illustrated, the one that wrote Stay Hungry. He's the one that's passionate to try and sell to America that this is, again, something beautiful and that we should all do it. He put these words in Arnold's mouth. Arnold and the sculpting and all of that, that was text that was written for him. It agreed with Arnold's philosophy. I do believe that Arnold spent a lot of time in the gym looking at himself and saying, hey, I really need to bring up my thighs or whatever. But I do think that some of this crafting, what we're seeing left over from the book, is the idea at the beginning here. If you have the impression that it's just dumb guys that pick up heavy things and take steroids and that's all they do, they're really trying to sell the idea that there's more to it. And then as we get into it, we see what their routine is and what the machines that they're using.
And I do wish, again, that was, I think if this was made by people who knew what to do with the documentary, a lot of this context would have been shown in the film. Like, I had to go back afterwards when I was researching this, and they're like, oh, they're going against all these biases that, you know, if you look like this, you were in a freak show as the strong man, and they were trying to change people's, like, that's great. I wish I knew that watching this film, because I'm watching this film as a kid raised on Arnie movies, and I think looking like that is awesome already. So I wish I understood the context more of what bodybuilding was when this film came out.
To a degree, I can understand. I mean, you said it yourself, Jacob. Bodybuilding isn't sexy to you. And I know when I look at the front of those muscle magazines, when I see them, you know, checking out in stores and things, I look and I sometimes, not always, sometimes I'm like, that person really works hard. And sometimes I look and I'm like, is that person human? That is not a man or woman that I would ever think of as attractive, given what they've done to their body. I mean, you think about body mods as being really 21st century goth punk, whatever, but they're doing body mods.
And I'm just saying, I wish we had, what did the average person in 1970, whatever, think about this kind of sculpt? Again, I just wanted some context.
Bud Cort would have done that. Bud Cort would have given you the average guy that just thought these guys were cool and was going to try to do that to his body. And they just didn't go. They ran out of money. He gave his salary back and they took the money they had and went with Arnold. The only history lesson we get, I think, is right here in the credits. We do see from the very first, one of the earliest movies ever shot, 1894, Eugene Sandow. That's a very famous posing routine that apparently broke all kinds of records in the Nickelodeon. If you were around at the turn of the century, this was one of the most popular films. And so people were always fascinated. I think you're right to bring out the circus freak. People saw these people as extraordinary, unattainable. They were born this way, and you could only find them under a big top.
But I don't usually think circus freak has a positive connotation. I mean, I don't think that you think of circus freaks as desirable. You look at them as sideshows.
Right. Again, that's where they're positioning it. And then you see that comic book and sand kicked in your face. And eventually we work our way up to, you know, they're not quite arenas, but they're band shells. And we're seeing the heroes of the day. We get introduced to all the players that we're going to see in this movie and doing their most muscular pose. And you're supposed to see an evolution, I think, and how not only have the guys gotten bigger, but the lights have gotten brighter and the crowds have gotten bigger.
And I got that. It's weird, though, thinking of these like 1920s old timey weightlifters pumping iron to some really cool Moog synthetic disco music.
That song is awful.
It is really, really bad. And they use it twice.
Oh, that synthesizer is throughout this documentary.
How much cocaine would you have to do before you got out on the disco floor to that? I don't know.
More than they have.
Yes. Although these guys did like to party. And there's a lot of footage that we will never see. They said they shot a lot. And there are things that I know about this that Gaines and the director have talked about. Again, there's a 25th anniversary DVD that has more footage. And then there's stuff that's known that we cannot see because Arnold bought the rights in the early 90s and will not let people see it because it includes things that, from what I hear, I'll bring it up as we go along, but just things that you wouldn't want to go out if you were a big star.
And trying to run for governor.
Exactly so. Well, this was even before that, a decade before that. But yeah, it just after T2, I don't want people to know this. It's very clear, though. I mean, just from these opening scenes, he's the king, right? Just the way he's walking through the gym, the way everyone has to bow to him, really. I mean, there's no doubt about it. He is the most idolized, if not beloved, person in this Gold's Gym.
Oh, even if he's the bad guy here, he's no Billy Mitchell. Going back to King of Kong, like, he has charisma. I don't care how many pranks he's going to pull on Lou. I'm on Arnold's side. Like, this is a guy that should be a movie star. He should be in some Conan movie. Someone get on that. Like, yes.
Yeah, I agree. This guy is charismatic. I never really thought of him necessarily as villainous in this. There's a couple of moments where it's like he's a jerk, but he's our focus pretty much for the first half hour of the film. And so because we're focusing on him so much and he is charismatic, I think of him initially as the protagonist, our main character at least. And yeah, he's kind of funny. I mean, he's coming all the time. It feels like coming when he's pumping iron and the blood goes into his muscles.
Was that monologue written for him?
Having lifted just a little bit, having a personal trainer who had me lift, if it felt like that, I would look like these guys. No, it doesn't feel like that, at least at a beginner level.
I don't know. Maybe you've been coming wrong all this time.
To answer your question, no, this is something that Arnold came up with, but he encouraged. He didn't actually believe it, but he knew they were told, we need some outrage, we need some sensationalism. And there's one thing that comes up all the time when I hear about Schwarzenegger on any set of any movie or whoever he's with is he just likes to shock people. He says things he doesn't even believe just to see, just to get a rise, just to get a reaction, just to play games. Those mental games that he's going to later be doing on Lou and the other guys. He's doing it all the time. And so here, yes, he's fully admitted that having sex with a beautiful woman is way better than when he's posing or lifting 12 reps of something really heavy. But he thought that, I mean, let's just face it. If you're new to this, 1977, and you're a straight guy coming in here, up to this point, bodybuilding has been thought of a place like those are weird guys. They're either homosexual or they're psychologically messed up.
Well, that was the reputation of a lot of those bodybuilding magazines, like in the 50s and 60s. Oh, only the homosexuals bought those.
Right. Arnold made it straight. That's the selling point. Here he is saying you can get women and you're going to feel like you're having orgasm all day long. I mean, I can just imagine all the straight guys running out of this theater into the gym afterwards. They're just like, oh, this is how I get women. And this is, you know, the 70s too, like when the pickup and the singles bars and all of that. Like, it's an excellent sales pitch. Arnold is here to tell you that bodybuilding is going to get you laid.
And yet you see him in some photo shoots, and those women, some seem playful, but some seem unenthused to be there, but they're going to get the job modeling, so they're doing it anyway.
Yeah, I mean, Arnold talked about that a lot off camera, as well as I think maybe in this movie, but not every woman is attracted to this kind of build. And certainly at that time, because it was less common, less people lifted weights, a lot of people were repulsed. He would come on to women and they were like, get away, you are a weird freak. Again, the circus freak thing hung over him and he wasn't a star yet. So he did not always find success just taking off his shirt.
And again, that would be great stuff if this was an actual documentary. Like, this is the stuff that I want to know, like what people think of them. Like, I really did want to get more into the psychology. I do feel like overall, the pumping iron, it's just, yeah, it's like, hey, look how cool this guy is, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and how much fun he's having. Like, I want to get into the psychology. I want to understand them. Like, this takes a way more dedication than I will ever have. And I want to know why they do that. And ultimately, because it impresses some girls. Like, I feel like there's something deeper that I wish it got to.
I don't know. I feel like if I quit podcasting and took 100% of the time I podcast and lifted, I'd look like these guys. There's something to obsession, I understand. But I wish it did get more psychological. I wish there was more of an outsider view. I feel like initially in these early scenes, it's almost instructional the way we see them lifting and things.
Yeah, there's so much time dedicated to just watching these guys lift stuff in this film.
Again, I think here with Arnold, what they're really selling at the beginning is that, I mean, they downplayed the homosexuality, but like he goes to a co-ed prison. This like moment was like blew my mind.
Yes.
And the guys are like, come give me a kiss. He plays to them too. I mean, he is just loving the idea of being the perfect object. And you can see it in him that he walks around the way that he's talking, the confidence that he exudes. He'll later say, I have no weak points. Like, I am literally a perfect specimen walking around, and everyone is amazed when they see me. It's fun. Not in this movie, and I think you're right. If we had documentarians that weren't Arnold's friends, they would have included Frank Zane, who beat him in an Olympia, I believe, in the 60s, one of his earliest, or maybe it was a Mr. Universe. I get those confused.
He did lose one Olympia. Like, his first Olympia, he came in second, so...
Then Zane beat him in that one. And Zane was just, you know, he's not on camera here very much. You can see him in the background. But he's like, they should have called this movie Pumping Arnold, because this is bullshit. This man has flaws. Let me tell you what they are. Look at his thighs. Look at his abs. This guy has weak points, and I've beat him.
And that's what I would want from a documentary about bodybuilding is, yeah, like, tell me what a bad calf looks like, because I hear those are always the toughest, those calves. Mm-hmm. Like, people get plastic surgery for those calves.
Nobody likes squats, Jacob. It's terrible.
Squats are awful. Like, working out, period, is just awful. I don't like any of it. But I do think this is a great sizzle reel for Arnold's career. Like, if you want to show me, like, who the next huge movie star is going to be, and you show me this film, I'll go, oh, yeah, that guy's got, he's got the charisma, he's funny, he's charming, he's got a little bad boy to him. Like, yeah, make this guy a movie star. I think it totally works on that level.
But we also meet early on Mike Katz, and I feel like we get into a little bit of his psychology. He's this balding guy who's lifting constantly, used to be a football player.
Junior high school teacher.
Yeah, he is just like, how can your heart not go out to this guy? Like, he's a junior high school, not even a high school.
Yeah, not even high school, junior high.
Yeah, a family man, works out in his garage. I mean, just like, instead of parking the car, he just got a couple free weights. The do-it-yourself quality is quite endearing.
But he was bullied as a kid for being Jewish and for being smaller. So what you see here, I feel, is a bit of the mentality. And I've known at least one person who was like this. He was kind of picked on as a kid, got the I'll show them, and just obsessed at the gym. And I've read Lou Ferrigno's autobiography. There's a very similar quality there. He was picked on a lot of as a kid because of his hearing. And we'll talk more about Lou, but I feel like getting into more of that psychology, the self-depreciating, I wasn't good enough, I'll show them, I'll become good enough kind of thing. I wish there'd been more of Mike.
Yeah, this is such a weird little aside in this film when you go on Mike Katz's journey and Ken Waller going up against him. And then it just goes back to Arnold. I'm like, wait, what was that? Again, if this was a documentary, like this would all build to something. But it like just comes and goes. And I guess it's a little microcosm of the film, what's going to happen.
These are the amateurs. The important thing to realize is the segue is, and it's short, but they have a short Southern guy who's like, I moved to Venice because I saw Arnold in a magazine and I wanted to be here. And Arnold takes a moment and shows him how to point his hand. And he's like, short guys tend to hide their body. Don't do that. He has this kind of nice instructive moment where you think, oh, he's not all about himself. And we segue into the influence. There's this whole world. We think bodybuilding is about the big guys, but there's that second strata of people and competitions where they're going for trophies and maybe they'll get to the Olympia, but first they have to clear the Mr. Universe bar. And so Katz he's at that level. He thinks he's the tortoise. He thinks that, I've gone to a few of these and I've always, I get the crowds worked up. The audience seems to like me, but I never clear the statue. And so this is my year. I'm going to go to South Africa. Fourth time is the charm. The funny thing is he's still bullied. Like even now that he's this big monster guy that, everyone's cheering, he still looks like the bullied four-eyed guy when Ken Waller comes and steals his shirt.
Look, it's wrong to steal a shirt. But Ken Waller, he has this whole like thing where he's like, his chest is too wide for his arms and this and that. I wish I understood that more. I wish they would have done a screenshot of Mike Katz and like showed the proportions and explained like what was wrong. Because Ken Waller, well, you're a jerk. You're stealing his shirt. You're trying to psych him out. I don't know if that's an unreliable narrator or not.
Well, here's what I would say, Jacob. Yeah, we could sit down. I'm sure there are tons of YouTube channels where we could go study these men and see why one's a winner and one's a runner-up. But a lot of this is, I think it's just attitude, right? The reason why Mike Katz is going to go home on fourth place is because he doesn't look like a champ, because he still carries himself like a loser, because he still feels like this family man that doesn't feel good enough to play with it. Like there's something about his screen presence that tells you he's going to lose even before it's declared.
Oh, yeah. I never believed he was going to win because, yeah, I don't know. It's that do something with that hairdo. You got a receding hairline. Just embrace it. Like, that was a big part of it for me.
It was before the age where you'd shave your head when it was like that, though. So what you're kind of stuck, damned if you do, damned if you don't. But I thought he might be the underdog. I actually thought we might follow him more. The stealing the shirt, I did a little reading up on that. Apparently, those two guys kind of teased each other. The shirt was stolen, but it was never intended to upset him that much, and the guy felt really bad.
Yeah, why did he need that shirt so bad? You're not posing with the shirt.
It's his lucky shirt. Yeah, all of that came later. They came after this contest and filmed the football scene where Ken's like, I'm going to go steal it. This is, again, this makes me feel like I'm watching reality TV in the way all of that stuff is faked. Of like, oh, they just wanted the drama of they're sending the idea that this guy had it wrapped up in the bag and then Ken Waller came and took his lucky shirt and that was all that he needed to lose the confidence and thus lose the competition. Not quite true, but I appreciate the idea that they're getting to here, which is that a lot of this is not about your body. I mean, obviously, a lot of it is, but a lot of it is about how you carry yourself. And if you don't have the right attitude, if you can't pose, it doesn't matter how great your body is. There's two elements. There's what you've done in the gym and there's what you do on stage. And Katz doesn't have that stage presence.
Yeah, and I wish we had more of Katz so I could see that he didn't have that stage presence continually. But he's pretty quickly forgotten in this movie. He has...
I don't forget about him. I love him. He's my favorite character here. My heart breaks for Mike.
But again, this is like a microcosm of what you're going to see play out with Arnold and Lou. Like, it feels like a primer for that.
Yeah, not only that, but again, just that moment where he's in the dressing room and he hears that Ken Waller has won. And he's like, I'm going to go shake his hand.
Yes.
And get my shirt back.
I'm telling you, Christopher Guest was behind this. Like, some of these things feel like so comedic.
I love him in this moment. I'm just like, oh, you deserve to win something. Get him some kind of statue. Most heart.
He got nothing, right? I mean, we never see him again. I don't know who this guy is.
Fourth place. You don't get nothing for fourth place.
I don't think he ever did go on to be a winner either. I looked up his career and it didn't seem kind of an also ran. I think this movie has given him, a life of people know who he is because, again, it's a small moment in the film, but this movie would be less without it. You could probably cut all these other guys out and just make it Arnold versus Lou, But I like the fact that we saw some, we spent some time with the amateurs. We probably should have spent more time with amateurs.
I would totally agree with that. But that said, I know who Arnold is, so I'm wanting more Arnold. I know who Lou is, and I know Lou's a big part of this, and I'm wondering where Lou is.
Yeah, they're saving him. They got to build him up.
I didn't know Lou was in this. I wasn't aware that this was an Arnold-Lou rivalry.
Oh, yeah. I mean, again, I read about this in Ferrigno's autobiography. He wrote all about this. He did write that some of it didn't happen as it was shown here, and that things weren't quite as antagonistic as they were shown here. But how, yeah, he was training hard. He was, you know, it was kind of like a Rocky scenario, right? He was from the Bronx. He was trying to do it small school.
Okay, I feel bad. I didn't know he was born, like he was a natural U.S. citizen, because I didn't know he was deaf.
You didn't know that? Whoa.
I didn't know that. I just thought, oh, he came over here like Arnold from Italy when he was 20-something, and just like, that's how he talked. I had no idea. I actually feel bad. Like, look, I've got a Lou bias, just like I have an Arnold bias. I think I got a pro-Arnold bias. When it comes to Lou Ferrigno...
Have you met him in person? Have you done the lines?
I have not done the lines. I've snuck a picture of him and got yelled at, though.
Oh my God, this guy is a ripoff artist. How did he yell at you? I'll tell my story of how he robbed me, but you go first.
No, all I know is he carries a Polaroid camera around with him, because if you want a picture with him, you're going to pay him like $20 to get that Polaroid. Like, and this was, I think it might have been my first San Diego Comic Con, like when maybe the iPhone 3, the 3S maybe was the new thing. And so, like, I had that, and I kind of knew he had this reputation. Don't try to sneak his picture. Like, there was a few of us holding up our phones to snap a picture of him as he's walking, you know, down one aisle towards us. And he's just like, put them away. Like, he was just, like, yelling at us for taking pictures with our phones at him. Because you got to pay the man if you want a picture.
Yeah, I first met him at one of my very earliest conventions. So I'm talking 2002. Now, I've seen Lou more often than I've seen my own parents in the past 20 years.
He's at every convention.
Every convention. I mean, there's certain people I wonder if he rooms with. Like, do he and Sam Jones bunk up at these things? But
I bet you it's him and Virgil, because Virgil seems to be at every convention too. No one going to get Virgil's autograph, though. He's always by himself.
But Lou, the very first time I went up to get his autograph, I had my Incredible Hulk box set. I wanted him to sign the DVD cover. It was like $40, and he's really selling hard this autobiography. Buy my book. I wrote it myself. I'm self-published. Buy my book. If you buy my book, I'll autograph it for free. So I buy his book, and he doesn't sign it. And the book was like $60, and the autograph was $40. So I'd given him $100. And so I say, will you sign the book? $40 more. Well, he had my $100. So it's like, no, I just don't think I'm going to get you to sign my book. A couple years later, I actually sold that Incredible Hulk disc set because I was purging DVDs, and then I regretted doing it. So I went to another con to get another signature.
You do this a lot. I just want to put it out there. Arnie is famous for this. This is your trick. Binge and purge.
And so I'm looking at the price list, and it says Lou Ferrigno, $40. And so I know his tricks now. This isn't just me. People who go to cons know this. You go up to Lou, and his price is whatever he feels like at the moment, not yep. What the posted price is. So I went up to him, and I went, how much is your autograph? $40. Okay, that's what it said. Here's my DVD. Oh, $60. What? Why? Because it's a Hulk DVD. I'm like, okay, thank you. And I start to put it away.
If you would have brought Hercules DVD, that's $40. But that Hulk one's extra $20.
It's 10 cents for Cage if you want that movie signed.
Then as I'm walking away, the huckster's like, if I personalize it, I'll do it for $40. So I go back and he has to sign it to Arnie to make sure I'm not eBaying his signature that pre-COVID anybody could get any weekend of the year. It's literally one of the least valuable autographs on the secondary market. But to be sure I'm not eBaying that shit for $5, gotta sign it to Arnie. And anybody I know who goes up to him and, you know, thinks of the Incredible Hulk as like, this guy was one of my idols and he seems so cool on the King of Queens and an I Love You Man. You get up there and he rips you off.
I got a tip for you. Like, it's a day pass. It's $40 to go to Gold's Gym Venice. I've seen him sign many people's stuff when he's in there. Like, I think that might be his convention mentality.
It may well be. but it's very off-putting. And I have seen him yell at people who are taking his photo from afar. He's like, you want a photo? You come over here and pay. But I read his autobiography, and, you know, we see him and his parents in here. His autobiography tells a different tale than what I'm seeing on screen. It says his father was very mean. The kids were mean to him. He found out around the age of 3 that he was hard of hearing. They had to buy him a hearing aid. And back then, apparently it was like a giant 8-inch box you had to carry.
Oh, yeah. It was like a transistor radio. You had a clip on yourself.
And the kids at school mocked, like, made fun of him, pushed him down, broke the radio. And then his dad pushed him around. I can't remember the exact things, but his dad was really mean to him and wouldn't get him another hearing aid and things. And so I got a lot of animosity towards his parents and his childhood that is not seen here when you see the old photos.
It's because they're trying to tell a different story. I think the idea initially was, we're going to make Lou the big bad outlaw that's coming to town and can Arnold the hero defend himself because this guy is bigger, meaner, stronger, whatever. And then when you meet Lou, again, the personal story comes through so much that he says things like, gee, Dad, he's big. I don't think that you could have a villain say these kinds of things. He seems like a big kid. And I think that they ultimately decided the way to position these two as polar opposites. Arnold is the cocky West Coast superstar who left his family, who, like, so cared so little about his father, he didn't even go back for his funeral.
Hey, you got to be in the zone when you're working out. You can't let any emotion come in. Your dad's dead. Forget it.
And Lou is the guy that works out with his father. Neither is entirely true. Both of those stories are concocted for this movie, but it shows you how they're working behind the scenes to try and contrast the two as polar opposites.
And I definitely felt that. And, you know, again, I got this very critical view of Lou Ferrigno. I did sympathize with him here. I think they position him right. Like, yeah, he's working out with his dad and his dad's helping him. And he was the kid that had a disability and he was bullied for that. Like, I'm like, oh, I kind of feel bad for having this awful opinion of him because of his convention appearances for so many years.
Yeah, I was wondering how much you were holding against him, whatever he didn't sign for you, because I think
I didn't want anything signed from him. I'm just like, oh, there's Lou Ferrigno. I'm going to take a picture. Just like, oh, there's Ron Jeremy at a Comic-Con. I'm going to take a picture.
I think he's clearly the sympathetic one. I think Arnold, as the movie goes along, I don't know if it looks worse and worse for him, but they've cut out some of the stuff. How would you feel if Arnold was saying, I'm like Hitler? Because apparently some of that footage,
he does say he loves dictators.
They cut off the next sentence. Apparently, like, the filmmakers have gone and gotten the transcript. You can't see the footage, but he did end up doing, like, a Hitler impersonation.
Oh, my God.
And talked about how you have to like Hitler because he was able to get a crowd. And he was able to, you know, like, convince people to do stuff. Arnold didn't like his politics, and he likes Jewish people, but he's like, anyone that has that will to power to bring people to them, I envy that. I cultivate that.
I mean, he is from Austria. I get it, Arnold.
Yeah, they're similar in that way, and he made that connection for us. It's also worth pointing out that his father, if you didn't go back for the funeral, it might be because his dad is highly alleged to have served as a Nazi.
Yeah, I remember this all coming out during his run for governor.
When I saw the photo of his dad, my immediate thought was, and I said to my wife, he looks like Hitler because he had that little nose hair stash. And they did point out, I mean, Arnold's dad was in law enforcement. Lou's dad was a police officer. So there is that parallel, but yeah, that dad, that mustache, it was like, oof.
Lou's dad did not train him. They told him to do this, and they knew that they needed someone to speak for Lou, because Lou's hearing impairment also means he has a speech impediment. And so they just knew that they couldn't rely on Lou. When we hear from Lou, he's just screaming Arnold's name and pumping iron or just one or two sentences. He's very much internalized and brooding and nervous. Meanwhile, Arnold will just sit there and take all day to tell you whatever. I mean, the contrast is striking.
I will say this, in pumping iron, like, again, with King of Kong, I'm all on Steve Wiebe's side. Like, Billy Mitchell, one of the great cinematic villains ever. But, like, I am never rooting for Billy Mitchell.
He's still trying to clear his name, too.
I know. You're not going to clear it. You're a cheater, dude. But with this one, like, Arnold is so charismatic. I'm glad they cut the Hitler stuff. I don't want that. So I'm like, yeah, like, this guy is just fun to be around. But they do frame Lou Ferrigno in such a way, like, again, I'm sympathetic towards him. I'm like, oh, this is a great underdog story. Like, I'm rooting for both of these guys for different reasons.
I'm noticing the way they're filming it is that Arnold is lifting. He never seems to struggle that much. You never see him not able to do a rep. He does the reps he has to do. When you see Lou, he's grunting. He's like, do 10 reps. He can only do 7. He's like, I can't. And then he does a couple more and he's screaming Arnold's name. But it's like, you're showing one guy who apparently it comes really easy to, at least how the film shows it, and one guy who is defeated by the weights.
Well, Arnold actually makes the claim that pain doesn't get to him. He can faint, he can vomit, he doesn't mind. Like, when other people are collapsing from pain, he says, that's where I'm getting to work. 5 more reps.
Yeah, he talks about the pump, where that's when you really push yourself. That's where you've really broken down the muscle and you're pushing yourself. That's where the bodybuilding really comes into play, those last few reps.
Right. It's a mental thing for him. And again, the will to power. There is something dictator-like about his approach here, but it's more charming than Hitler. I will say, when he says milk is for babies, you should drink beer. That's, again, I find myself being seduced. I agree with you. I remember watching this movie and feeling like Arnold was the bad guy and really liking Lou the first time I saw it. And now, as I'm watching it, I'm like, no, it's just a different... It's just watching people that have different skills. It's kind of like watching Showgirls, you know? Like, one's Elizabeth Berkley, one's Gina Gershon. You know, it's catty in that way, but, like, I don't know. Like, they both have their own qualities. There's something charming about both. One is sunny California. And, boy, that place that Lou is working out in, too, that dungeon where, like, all he's got around him are fat people that are, like, scared of him.
Yes.
It would be quite a different thing to be surrounded by people that loved you, that are built like you, that can give you tips. Arnold just has the edge here. Like, the only thing Lou has going for him is this fake father relationship.
And that he's 6'5". He's bigger than anyone has ever seen.
Which I didn't realize. I did not know he was taller than Arnold. You know, they give their stats here.
Oh, Arnold's short.
Well, I've gone to plant... First of all, I've seen Arnold live at Jay Leno, but you can't really get a feeling for massiveness on stage. But when I went to Planet Hollywood and saw his T2 outfit and just how big the arms were, how big the shoulders were, I was like, God damn, this guy's big. But to think of Lou as even bigger, for some reason, just I guess because of how he was portrayed on the Hulk, always kind of squatting and things, I always thought of Lou as shorter and wider. But no, he's taller and bigger than Arnold and should possibly have won.
I've stood next to both of them. And the thing about Arnold is, I think they say he's 6'2 or 6'3.
No, he's like 5'10.
He's shrunk. He's probably my height and I'm 5'10. So... It happens when you get old. I don't know what went down there, but he is not as big as you think he's going to be. Lou's every bit as big as you think he's going to be, even now.
And I guess Lou slouches, because when I met Lou, I didn't think, my God, what a towering man.
Yeah, neither did I, because I was so scared of him, I was getting ready to run away. I didn't get a good look at him. I wanted him to stop yelling at me.
Well, can we all agree the shortest one is Franco? And we do spend a little bit of time. If there's a third wheel, we do have Arnold's good friend.
Yeah, I didn't know there was like an under 200-pound weight class for bodybuilding. Like in boxing, they get, you know, welterweight, featherweight, lightweight, like all these different weights. But I guess they just break under 200 pounds and over 200 pounds.
Yeah. I mean, and that's because we do have different standards about a short man versus a tall man, right? Like there's a whole issue surrounding that. And so I don't know, like Arnold plays into that. Like when they ask him, like, all right, you're going to do psychological warfare on Lou. Is Franco going to fall for that? He goes for the short bit. He's like, he's a child and I am his father. I mean, like, that's just, I mean, they were friends and they are friends going way back. Like before either came to America, they knew each other in Berlin. So I think some of this is puffed up for the camera. But in kidding, there's truth. I also do think that Arnold, just as a defense mechanism, part of the way he wins is by putting down everyone around him. Even his good friend, he's going to ultimately call a short child, and I'm the father. And Franco's got one funny bit. He doesn't have the personality Arnold does, but when he goes back to the old homeland in Sardinia and we see his parents who, like, couldn't not get it even more. I mean, like, they are just clueless as to what has happened to their son. He helps them with that parked car problem. He's strong. I mean, that's the thing. He says, I'm the strongest person, and he might be. He can lift a car out of a parking spot. He can blow up a hot water bottle like it's a balloon. Like, that is strength we do not see any of the other guys exhibiting. So should that be the standard? It goes back to the idea of who's deciding this contest and what should we go for? Is it about personality? Is it about size? Is it about strength? All three of these guys win in one of those areas.
And it would have been really nice to talk to a single judge.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. I need some context to understand that. I don't need a deep dive. I don't need to feel like an expert. But what do you mean by symmetry? What do you mean by proportions? Like, give me something so I could at least be an amateur judge and go, oh, okay, yeah, his deltoid is shaped like this. That's obviously perfection or whatever.
Again, I think it is subjective, but you're right. When we do see the judges, they look like accountants, right? Like, they're these little guys that don't look like they've worked out at all, at least in the clips that I've seen. Now, I do know that pro bodybuilders go back and judge contests, but it seemed like these guys have no standard to talk about. All of these men are in better shape than they've ever been.
And I did think it was interesting they break down, like, the competition is that a lot of the judging goes on before these people show up. The audience shows up, because that's what I always saw on ESPN 17 was a huge stadium, not a stadium, but a huge, you know, event hall full of people cheering and all that. And that's kind of like that's all for show. I mean, there's still judging going on there, but a lot of the main stuff goes on before that.
That is a surprise. I had no idea that they've pretty much already know who the winners are when the crowd gets there. Like, it's kind of all done in these close quarters. And Arnold does have a father figure. You know, he says that, like, I didn't go to the gravesite and all of that, but left out of this, and I do think a good documentarian would have gotten into this, is like, Joe Weider is responsible for these contests, and he is the one that is like, Arnold is my guy. He's going to be the person that I use to sell muscle mags and my protein powders, and my whole empire is going to be built on this guy. There have been people that have alleged that these judges are fixed. They are plants. They already know who's going to win because Joe Weider is going to put his thumb on the scale. I mean, I don't know. That's inside politics that I can't speak to. But you do wonder, how do these guys come to this conclusion now that we're seeing what looks like all of them in tremendous shape doing some kind of dance-off that, like, I don't know who's better than who. I do know that Arnold does tricks about getting into the spot with the best light. And again, the psychological warfare, the way that that scene where he goes to Lou at the breakfast table, that's vicious.
Yeah, that's a great scene.
That was the one moment where I thought of Arnold as villainous.
Yeah, I mean, and again, the compartmentalization, the idea that he doesn't feel, you can steal my car and I'm not going to allow myself to feel. I can lift, you know, tons of weight that's killing me and will make me collapse and I don't care. Like, just the sense that he is the Terminator, really. He's selling himself as the idea that he is a robot, a cyborg, skin over a machine. It's coming out here.
I have to ask you guys, though, would any of this matter? Would you be as interested if this was not the Arnold that we know, but maybe an Arnold that never got that acting career and was never that 80s action star? Would this have the same appeal? Because for me, the appeal of this is because, yeah, I loved Arnold when I was a kid, and I know who Lou Ferrigno is, and it's fun to see these two childhood favorites, like, face off against each other. Do you think this is compelling enough if none of these guys ever went on to be anything but whatever in the bodybuilding world?
I had that exact thought, and the only person that I didn't know that I felt for was Katz. You know, we got into a little bit of his story. So seeing Katz tells me that this movie could have made me care, even if I didn't know who Arnold was and Schwarzenegger was. But the way this movie is, even though Arnold hadn't really acted in much and Ferrigno hadn't acted at all, if I didn't know those two from other things and have them to hang on to in this movie, and since they get rid of Katz and don't really focus on anybody else, if I wasn't hanging on them for other reasons, I would be totally disinterested in this film.
I don't know if it's high art. Here's the thing. If you ask me if it's like a good movie, that I don't know, but it's like Showgirls. It's like Dance Moms. It's like when you turn on that reality show and you know you shouldn't be watching it because it's really catty and stupid. You get three episodes in because you can't turn your eyes away. I do feel like these guys are in their freakiness, and I don't mean that in their physical size, but just in their games and their placing such high importance on something that feels so silly, it does play like comedy to me. So the answer to your question, Jacob, is yeah, I think I still would be pulled into this.
So good Christopher Guest movie for you.
But worth noting, I don't watch Real Housewives. I don't watch any reality show, although I did watch The Apprentice until Lou was voted out. I don't like Showgirls except for a couple of reasons, none of which are plot related.
I think they're all plot related reasons, Arnie. Showgirls.
But if I don't like those and I don't respect those, what does this have more?
Well, then let me be clear. Again, I don't think of myself as a person that likes those either. But haven't you gotten caught? Haven't you flipped channels and been like, what the hell's this?
Oh, I've definitely got stuck binging 90 Day Fiancé. What a train wreck those people are. But they pulled me in.
That's all I'm saying is that, like, you know better. It's like eating the whole bag of potato chips. All of a sudden, like, well, shit, that's gone. Like, I know this isn't good for me. Like, it's not a good documentary in the sense I'm learning about what aesthetics in the sport are, or learning about the steroids, learning about the personal stories. No, it's more like a game in which we watch these guys try to psych each other out before they go on stage. And so that cattiness, that bitchiness that we normally think about women, like we normally see this in stories about women being nasty to one another while they try to win a beauty contest. The novelty here is that it's these macho guys doing it. To me, makes it, yeah, compelling.
I'm sadly not even compelled with the Lou Arnold stuff. I'm curious, but in no way is this presented as a compelling way. I don't think there's enough of the sniping at the breakfast table. There's not enough character, human character here to make me care about the men behind the weights.
It's a short movie in general.
And I think that's where I agree with Stuart that this works better as almost a mockumentary comedy, like with just these big personalities. Because yeah, that my problem is when I go to watch a documentary, I want to get into the psychology. I want to kind of understand the subject a little bit, maybe not 100% being an expert, but I want to understand it more. And I want to understand why people are into whatever this thing is about. And I don't feel that ever really comes out.
No, it doesn't.
Well, let's just take it as a sports movie. Did you guys know who was going to win ahead of time? Were you in any suspense when we're at the South African contest and it's down to three guys?
I was really hoping it would be the French guy. Like, just
yeah.
Neither of the focuses of this documentary win.
Like Rocky, it's the black guy. Yeah, that would be fun.
I had read that book that said who won, but I couldn't remember if Lou won or lost. And I could not remember that. So I was in suspense.
Yeah. First, we have the short man contest. And so Franco wins. We know that the guy that actually got the cover of the Pumping Iron book was a short man, and he got second place. So, like, it's kind of a big deal that Franco gets it here. And then the tall man. Here's the thing. I'm not a judge. They haven't taught me about what to look for. But just looking at these guys, it's a personality thing. I think that ultimately what I would judge is who is enjoying being in the spotlight the most. It's a clear winner, right? Like, Arnold clearly loves this.
Oh, yeah. Lou never smiles. You never get warm fuzzies from him.
He's the greatest because he's an entertainer just by nature.
And what I saw wasn't just the attitude, but when they turned around and showed their back, Arnold's was like a roadmap, and Lou's was kind of flat. That was the only thing I could tell quantitatively between the two, is that Arnold had a more ripped back.
Yeah. Dan was so worried about Lou showing his wrinkles or whatever. Again, it's funny. I mean, all of this interpersonal stuff, real or imagined, made up for the film, I'm glad it's here. I do think it provides color and character and comedy. And yes, Arnold takes the whole thing. He's going to get first place in the tall man, and then his friend's going to come out. And I mean, come on. Has a short man ever beat a tall man when it all came to the final one? That would be interesting to know.
Well, Michael J. Fox won the basketball game in Teen Wolf.
Okay. Yes. I forget about such important sports moments. But boy, this ending, like, this must be what you were talking about, Jacob, when they were like running ads against Arnold as governor. Is like, imagine him with fried chicken and a joint.
I couldn't believe they ate cake and carved up like that.
Oh, no, that's what they always do. I've watched stuff like with The Rock, like, you know, when it's game season, this is my diet. I got to eat like 17 chickens for breakfast. after that competition, it's like, give me 12 cheesecakes. And like, they just binge for a day.
And again, this is Arnold the asshole again. He's like, sing happy birthday to Lou, because not only has he lost, but he's lost on his birthday.
It's so sad.
Let's just sing to him and let me just rub it in. And in the car ride to the airport, I'm going to talk about sleeping with your sister and coming over to eat your mom's cheesecake. I mean, this guy is a major ass.
And Lou is feeling uncomfortable on camera. He's like, I got to take this coat off, show I'm as big.
Yeah, I did appreciate that.
And you're saying major ass, Stuart, but I'm also saying, put this guy in a movie. I want to see him in a movie. He's fun.
Yeah, I can't deny that. Like, as much as I want to hate Arnold for the bullying, because I don't like bullies. I think that's what it just comes down to. When I see bullying on screen, it triggers something.
I agree, bullying is bad, but there's also a thing when you, especially in sports competitions, like shit talking. Like, that's what you do.
Yeah.
You try to get inside the person's head. So for me, it's hard to see him as a total bully because this is a competition. Now, maybe after the fact, after he's won, and hey, let's sing Lou happy birthday to really rub it in. Maybe that's crossing a line. But because this is a sport, I kind of go along with this because that's what you do in sport. Look, when my family sits down to play Mario Kart, the amount of shit talking is unreal. I never feel like it's mean bullying, though.
I get you. I get. And again, I'm going to give that compliment, is that that was my initial reaction. Arnold, and my memory of this movie is, boy, you'll walk away hating Arnold. I'm not doing that. This time coming back to it, I'm not having that sense of anger towards him for being this way. It helps explain to me why he would go on to be the biggest box office star of the 90s and Lou would be the saddest muscle man on TV. You know, like that just, it makes sense that they had carved out their future reputations in this movie.
And that's what I find interesting after the fact. Like, look, I guess this was a hit in 1977. People like this. I'm not sure why, but I find it fascinating because I know who Lou and Arnold are. And so it's a neat little footnote in their history to watch this.
So Jacob, Stuart, do you recommend Pumping Iron? Jacob.
This one's kind of a hard one because how do you feel about Arnold and Lou Ferrigno? And do you want to see them go against each other? Because I don't feel this is the kind of documentary where you're going to learn a whole lot about bodybuilding. If you want to learn about that, I don't know, watch something else, not Pumping Iron, because this is about personalities. And, you know, I feel like we're in 2021 now. Who knows what this year holds? But like 2020, because of obvious reasons, like people were locked down and just watching Netflix. And like, I feel like two of the biggest things, especially in the early days of the pandemic back in March, were documentaries, Tiger King and The Last Dance, you know, about the Chicago Bulls winning the championship for however many a time. And I think those worked because they did set them up as dramas. I think people want those human stories. They want to see that, like Tiger King. Like, that's why people watch that, because it is such a reality show. But guess what? I also learned about like a lot of stuff when I watched Tiger King, about these illegal imports and this whole like black market for exotic animals. And that's what I watch documentaries for. I do want to learn something about that subject. And that's what I feel is missing with Pumping Iron the most, is that I just don't know anything more about bodybuilding after the film than when I was going in. And second, if I didn't care about Lou and Arnold, I don't know how much I would care about this. So do you like those two guys? Because then, yeah, you might find this entertaining just to see these personalities clash. I think this is great promotion for Arnold because he comes off as such a fun, charismatic fellow in this film. So like, it was fun to have warm feelings about Arnold again. I haven't felt those since he ran for governor in California and led this state and did what he did to it.
Follow him on Instagram. You'll like him.
So that's my thing. Like, I don't feel like I could give it like a straight recommend, because I, you know, how do you feel about these guys? Because you're not going to learn a whole lot about the art of bodybuilding. So it's entertaining on that level of reality TV. I agree. And if you like these guys, then watch it. But if you want to learn about bodybuilding, and ultimately that's what I go into a documentary for, and maybe that's my problem, is this is presented as a documentary and it's really not that, you're not going to learn a whole lot. So unless you care about the people in this because you've grown up with their TV shows and movies and all that, I don't know how much fun there is to be had here. So it, because it's so conditional whether I'd tell you to watch this or not, I'm going to go on the side of it's a very weak not recommend, but I just don't know if there's that mass appeal. Look, I know I'm wrong because this was a hit, but for me watching it, I wanted to know the context. I wanted to know about the freak shows and the psychology and all that, and none of that is there. So weak not recommend.
Stuart.
I hear what you're saying, Jacob, but I'm going to say, all right, you're right, probably correct. for those that are looking for knowledge, not recommend. But if you want Rocky the reality show, this is definitely a recommend. This is a solid recommend. This is Arnold giving the best acting performance I've ever seen him give. Because normally when he gets in front of the camera, he's stiff. And he is kind of like a joke. I feel like people have always enjoyed the fact that he is a bad actor with a garbled accent. And all of it, here we get why he got to where he was. He's able to use it. He's smarter than I give him credit for. I mean, that comes through in this movie. You can look at him in other movies and go, oh, he was a dumb guy that got lucky because of the way he looked. And here you go, no. That mind got him to where he was at. And that's what really impressed me about Pumping Iron is, sure, he always had a great body. He probably still has a better body.
Are you an Artie fan now?
I think of him in a different way. When I see this movie and think about this movie, I am impressed and attracted to the way he was able to create something out of nothing, frankly. I don't think much of a lot of the movies he made, but I think if you are a fan of his star appeal, I think it starts here. And I think it's telling the month this came out, he goes to collect a Golden Globe at the 1977 award ceremony, sharing the stage with Sylvester Stallone, who's winning for Best Picture. He's winning for Best New Star. These guys changed, for better or for worse, they changed fitness and they changed films. And if you're a fan of action movies or just movie history in general, I think you need to check out Pumping Iron.
And I came in really interested because this was something I had read about several times and was curious about, but I was coming in thinking of holding it to the King of Kong standard for documentaries, and it doesn't hold up. So then I started thinking about other documentaries, ones that are fine. You know, I think about some of those horror movie ones where they have the 6-hour extended cuts where they interview everybody involved with a film and things, and I'm like, at least the editors and the people making it are giving me a chronological history of a film. So I'm thinking about also A&E shows and History Channel documentaries I've watched where they do biographies of people or documentaries on films or historical events. And still, I always feel like I walk away from those educated. And here, I don't, because a lot of this doesn't feel authentic to me.
Well, it isn't. I mean, you're right.
Yeah, and I got that feeling watching it. Just, I'm savvy enough to know how you can edit things together, like reality television, and tell false narratives and things. So it didn't feel authentic, and I didn't really get to know much about the people. I didn't get a lot of personal stories. Just, it felt like they were giving the bare minimum of background. There was a lot of character moments for Arnold, but not a lot of who he is. There's just a lot of what he does. He doesn't go to his dad's funeral, you know? There's not a lot of why there. And I didn't know a lot about weightlifting coming in, and going out, I don't know a lot more about it than I did, and I don't care much more about it than I did. And it doesn't make me understand why people would be spectators for this sport. I mean, that's something I wonder about a lot of sports. I'm not a sports guy. I don't understand rooting for the home team.
I do think it goes to reality. It is drama, especially for men. Like, you watch wrestling, like professional wrestling, where so much of it is about the storylines. Like, dudes want drama too. We just want a little manlier, a little bit more muscle. And I do think sports satisfies that, that you are putting two things in conflict and seeing what the outcome is. I do think it works on a basic storytelling level.
To a degree, but you know what I like in the weird sports? MMA fights, where people are bloodied. You know what I wanted in this to happen?
You want Thunderdome is what you want.
I wanted Lou versus Arnold. Who can really kick ass? I wanted to see all this bodybuilding. Which one of you could take down the other one? That's what I want to see. Do those tiny calves make you easy to knock down and pummel? I don't get that, but I didn't understand why they became obsessed with this. I mean, it is an obsession. And then I hinted at this before, no discussion of juicing, even if it was accepted. I mean, don't tell me none of these people are on steroids.
No, they all are, and they all admit it.
So if I didn't know Arnold and Lou coming in, I'd have been incredibly bored. But there are some high points. There are some funny moments in this movie. Some intentionally funny, like some of Arnold's jokes like the story Arnold tells about the guy who he told to go scream. It's the new thing when you pose, yes. You scream as loud as you can.
So evil. Again, it makes him a rat bastard, but kind of an enjoyable one.
Yeah, like laughing so hard at his story about how the guy got escorted out after the fourth pose. I wish they had video of that.
Yeah, I don't think it actually happened that way. That's the problem. Correct. I don't believe his story, but it's humorous.
Yeah, I mean, there's funny moments here. And it humanizes the men behind the muscle in that, you know, Arnold can tell a good story. I'm not just going to be intimidated by, dear God, that bicep. But I do have to give this a weak not recommend. It just, I think it's only notable because Schwarzenegger and to a lesser degree Lou went on to be famous. I mean, there's certain movies like that. They pulled up Christian Slater's movie Twisted after Heathers. They pulled that out of mothballs because they're like, oh, we'll put it on video and slap his name on the front. If Schwarzenegger didn't become who he was, nobody would really remember this movie except those in the genre. I'm sure there's a lot of sports documentary movies that aren't talked about except among the players and lovers of that sport because nobody famous was in them.
Oh, but I had to watch them in junior high on rainy days for PE. So many sports documentaries.
But Clark, what about you? I mean, why do you recommend this film now that you've heard our discussion?
Well, I think it's exactly right that mockumentary or docudrama probably makes more sense than straight documentary and looking at it as, you know, a History Channel thing. I wouldn't recommend it either, but I think the experience and the people and seeing something that most people don't ever know anything about and seeing how obsessed and disciplined these guys are, and particularly seeing the start of a career that just blew out of the stratosphere, I think it's really an important movie, even if perhaps stylistically it is lacking.
How realistic is it in your experience that you've participated in some of these?
Oh, really, what they don't show is how severe the dieting is. I mean, I know to the gram what goes in. I track every calorie, every carb, every bit of protein, and you pretty much have to do that forever. It's a whole lifestyle thing. And they showed the working out part, but, you know, that's maybe half of it. The diet is just as important, and it's that discipline that really appeals to me. And I think you can see how disciplined Arnold is, that he's going to do whatever it takes to be at the top. And historically, I think that's really interesting when you consider all that he did afterward.
And again, it shows charm, too. I mean, if you've ever liked Arnold in anything, you're going to see that Arnold here. To me, this feels like the beginning of Predator. Like, if the Predator never showed up and they never found, like, the contrabass to shoot up, just, like, it's him and Carl Weathers shaking hands and flexing their biceps the whole time. Like, it just feels like that moment extended. I'm with you. And this is coming from someone that hasn't liked a lot of Arnold movies, but I think it's one of his more charming performances. And it is a performance.
And as part of my homework, I didn't just watch those Hercules films, but I went to, what did Arnold do like soon after this? Like, what was more contemporary with Lou Ferrigno's Hercules? Because Hercules in New York was like 14 years before that. And that, I think that was his Conan films. And I love those as kids. They were rough watching them as an adult this time. It's been many, many decades since I've seen them. But again, I could see why you'd want to watch those films, especially as a younger male or a younger individual that's just into that image. Like, he looks great in those films. And like, are his lines great? No. Is his acting great? No. But watching him swing a sword is fun. Like, it's just such a great image to see on the screen.
Not only that, but you bring up Conan. Conan kind of got us a sequel to this movie. I mean, it was a different director and has a very different feel. But Arnold decided to prep for that movie. He was going to get in contest shape, and that meant going back to the Olympia. He retires at the end of this film, and you think, okay, he's got 6 titles, that'll be it. He came back in 1980 with very little time to train and walked away winning. It got documented in 2 different movies. You can watch a feature-length movie called The Comeback. I watched the shortened 40-minute, more focuses on Arnold. It's called Total Rebuild. They released it on VHS, you know, after Total Recall. And you can see what's interesting about it. I'll put it this way, is you can finally see Arnold vulnerable. He's scared. It's been 4 years. He hasn't been training like these guys. Could he actually lose? And some will tell you he probably should have, that there were better guys on that stage. But spoiler alert, he does win.
Yeah, and again, I saw that when I was researching him, and I wonder, like you said, did he deserve to win, though? I mean, you watched the film, I didn't, but I wonder how much of it was marketing at that point.
He's not as charming. I will say that movie, and again, I think it's because the director isn't a good friend of his. Part of why we got the camaraderie. You could say it's not good in exposing things about Arnold, but because that director was friends with Arnold, it feels personable. And for that reason, it's fun to watch. This movie isn't a whole lot of fun to watch. It's just kind of watching Arnold and a lot of guys pose. And every now and then, Arnold says things that let you know, oh, the Terminator does have a little bit of fear in him. But they did make a proper sequel to this movie. The director of this movie did note that in 1980, women started competing, and they thought that that was a new angle on Pumping Iron. 1985, they put out Pumping Iron 2, The Women, which I could only find a very terrible copy online. Like, it's not readily available, and I do think that for better or for worse, society looks at muscle-bound women very differently than muscle-bound men. But that is what makes this documentary interesting.
I was going to ask, does this get in the psychology? Because I think, look, I don't want to come off as biased, but I think if you're a woman taking this, it's seen as a very masculine thing, what you're doing to your body. So again, I want to know, what is the psychology behind that? Like, why would you do this?
And not to be sexist, but when you bodybuild as a male, you are sculpting what is considered the pinnacle of masculinity. When you bodybuild as a woman, society's pinnacle of femininity is not that. In fact, you take away a lot of the body attributes that are considered beautiful in American society. So, yeah, that would be much more interesting to me.
Yeah, they try to find a Lou versus Arnold. And what it is there's this Australian woman who's all bulk. And so she has no femininity, but she's all muscle and she's big. And are they going to reward that? Are they going to go with the American, Rachel McLish, who is much more model pretty and has a physique that's muscular, but feminine still? Like, she still has something about her that's curvy and signals the idea that she would look great in a dress as well as the workout trunks. I don't think you get into the psychology as much as to why these women get into it, but you see the way that they're judged for how much they embrace or run away from masculinity. And I'll save the surprise, but neither one of them ends up winning. There's somebody else that comes in the running right at the end.
Black French woman, right?
Yeah, kind of. I won't spoil it, but there is an upset. And I do think the movie's pretty good. If you enjoyed Pumping Iron, your question is, would it matter if the people involved aren't superstars? I don't know any of these women that are in this documentary. I think it's still a good watch.
That was going to be my question, is there anybody famous in it?
Is China in it? Lucy Lawless? Yeah.
One of the women went on to do an exercise show on ESPN called Body Shaping. If you call that success, that's as big as she got. And Lou had a comeback movie as well. He, in 1994, when he was 44 years old, 20 years after the contest of Pumping Iron, he tried to compete again in what looked like kind of like an old timers. Like, it was all older guys. Like, it wasn't like he was going up against a 20-year-old.
Don't be calling 44 old. That's us.
It's not young. And in bodybuilding terms, it's on the edge of being competitive on the level that he is. Now, there's always different leagues and what have you, but Lou is still looking amazing in the movie, and I'm debating about whether I should tell you or not, but it's interesting to see how much it reminds me of Pumping Iron, and yet the story doesn't end up the way that you think it will. Probably worth a watch, but just not as entertaining, because Lou is not as charismatic. But you do get to see, what is it kind of interesting, is that you do get to meet his ex-wife, and you get to learn a lot more about him and, like, his bad relationship with his dad, Arnie. What you were talking about in that book all comes out in that documentary.
It sounds more real. It sounds more interesting. So, Clark, any final thoughts on Pumping Iron?
What do you got to do to get good calves? Why are calves so hard? I want a documentary just about calves. Why they're so hard to make look good for bodybuilding.
Well, you remember Arnold said he did have weak points, and calves were his weak point. So according to what I've read, he cut all of his pants off, so they're basically high waters. So he has to look at his calves every day until he gets them pumped up.
Now, there you go. Like, it just, he stares at it in the mirror until he's changed it. Yeah, that's interesting.
Something like that. But no, I was really curious to see what you guys would do with that. I'm a little more in Stewart's camp, as you guys can figure, but I think everything all is valid, and I hope you guys had fun with it.
No, I did have fun watching. Again, if you love Arnold, if you're a fan of Lou Ferrigno, or just you grew up in the 80s, then yeah, you probably would enjoy this. I enjoyed it at that level. Just, it's hard to give it a broad recommend, though, because it's so based on how you feel about those stars.
Well, I was just wondering if Stewart ever got his shirt stolen by Arnold.
For another day. We'll talk about it someday.
But I did enjoy having this conversation, and I enjoyed having you on with us, Clark, and thank you so much for your support. It means the world to us, and yeah, this has been a great conversation about a movie we would never have gotten to otherwise, I don't think.
Agreed. I had fun. And I'm going to have fun in February as well. Just a tip off, we're about to get into the Omen series. 5 films. I'm not going to spoil anything about what I think of those films. The best one is going to be the patron review in February of The Manitou. My favorite Rosemary Baby or Omen film is this crazy 1977 film with Tony Curtis. If you thought that Janet Leigh was a scream queen, his wife, and Jamie Lee Curtis, his daughter, was a scream queen, just wait till you see this guy. It's, oh my God, this movie is amazing. I'll say no more. But that's what we got for you right after all of these 5 Omen films. One more Devil Baby treat. The Manitou.
Indeed. Thank you all, patrons, for your monthly support. It's great to start off the new year with a cadre of supportive listeners like you guys who enjoy the show enough to go to your hard-earned money and support us that way. Thank you all so much. Happy New Year, and thanks for listening to Now Playing, the Wolf on the Podcasting Hill.
Body is not used to maybe the 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th rep with a certain weight. So that makes the body grow then, going through this pain barrier, experiencing pain in your muscles and aching, and just then go on and go on and go on. And this last 2 or 3 or 4 repetitions, that's what makes actually the muscle then grow. And that divides then one from a champion and one from not being a champion. If you can go through this pain barrier, you make it to be a champion. If you can't go through, forget it.
Thank you to all the listeners who have backed us through our Podbean crowdfunding campaign. And we hope you've enjoyed this special bonus movie review podcast.
I don't have any weak points. I had weak points a few years ago.
Without patrons such as yourself, we couldn't keep doing the shows we put out every single Tuesday. So thanks to you all.
I would like to thank you all for supporting me.
And a special thank you to Clark Fisher for his incredible support of our show and for picking Pumping Iron for our hosts to review.
That guy is just, it gives you chills when you watch that guy.
I know.
If you enjoy Now Playing, please head to iTunes and leave us a 5-star listing. It's the best way to help spread the word about the podcast.
In other words, you want me to be very nice?
Very nice to him.
Okay.
Because he needs a lot of help.
You can follow Now Playing on Facebook and Twitter, where we post announcements of new episodes and where the hosts post movie mini reviews. Links to our social media pages are available on our homepage.
Will you get your clan together, please?
Now Playing Podcast is produced by Arnie Carvalho.
It's like a dog. You know, you can kick a dog so long and it'll do 2 things. It's either going to roll over and die, or it's going to bite you.
Associate produced by Jason Latham.
His arms aren't big enough to match his chest. His thighs are too big for his calves.
Now Playing is edited by Steven and Arnie.
Can you believe the tension with these fellows? It's bad enough for you. How must it be for them?
Now Playing credits read by Brock.
The new thing is that he has to scream while he's posing.
The opinions expressed on Now Playing are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the opinion of Venganza Media Incorporated.
The only problem is now is made of the judge's opinion too. You never really know what's going to happen.
Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with the motion pictures reviewed or otherwise referred to herein.
We had to be the perfect example. We couldn't do anything bad.
All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of the respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of review and no infringement is intended.
You have to do everything possible to win, you know, no matter what.
Now Playing Podcast is an exclusive trademark of Venganza Media Incorporated and may not be used without the expressed written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
I don't care. You know, I can be bothered with that.
Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2020. And no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
All right, that's it. No more, no more.